Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine and veteran Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson. And Chuck, Montana Republicans are saying their victories this week are a mandate from the voters, having gained a few seats in the legislature to keep their majority and having won all of the statewide offices except governor. And Democrats, though, are saying not so fast.
That's right. And of all the statewide offices, of course, the one you really want to win is the governor, because the governor is the final arbiter who signs or vetoes bills. And as we've seen the last two legislative sessions, especially the last session in 2015, Governor Bullock is not afraid to veto Republican bills. I don't remember the exact number, but he vetoed more bills in 2015 than any other recent Montana governor has. So I don't know about a mandate. It's divided government, which is kind of the way it goes in Montana. The real question to me is, to what extent will the coalition between Democrats and the responsible Republicans, the reasonable Republicans, the moderate Republicans still exist? And I don't see any reason to think that still won't be a factor. And if so, Governor Bullock will be able to work around the Republican majority and still get some of what he wants, and including probably what he wants for the state budget.
The Republican Party leader, Jeff Essman, has a right to gloat, obviously, and Democratic Party leader Nancy Keenan, Chuck, must be doing some soul-searching in the wake of Tuesday's results.
Yeah, I would guess so, Sally. I mean, Jeff Essman gets the credit as chair for a party that really won everything save for the governor's race, and they won four of the five land board offices: the state auditor, the superintendent of public instruction, secretary of state, and attorney general. I can't remember the last time Republicans have had four of the five land board officers, and it's just the mirror image opposite of what we have now, with four Democrats holding those jobs and Tim Fox, the lone Republican, the attorney general. So it was a great victory for Republicans in the so-called Tier B races. I don't really like that term. I think they're each important offices. As for the Democrats, I suspect that there will be a lot of soul searching. Nancy Keenan came out of retirement to run the party. She was very disappointed in what had happened in 2014 when Democrats lost a long-held U.S. Senate seat and continued not to hold a U.S. House seat. So I would imagine Democrats are going to have some brainstorming sessions. I think a big question for them is, why can't they win in rural Montana anymore? You know, if you look at the map, they typically win most of the urban counties and the counties where Indian reservations are located. There were times when they used to win more up in the Flathead. They used to win seats regularly out in Miles City and Glendive, those kind of areas. They don't win those anymore.
Well, Rob, to Chuck's point he just made, Montana has long been kind of a political outlier in the Rocky Mountain West, mostly red, but not as red as, say, Idaho and Wyoming. Does this election maybe signal that is changing?
Well, I think so, Sally. And you know, one way of thinking about this is through just a little bit of broader historical context that could help assess what we see on coming out of Tuesday. You know, we've been talking about Montana as being a Republican-leaning state, and there's no doubt that it is. Consider this: the Republican presidential candidate has carried the state in all but two elections since Harry Truman was in the White House. And those two exceptions came in highly unusual years. 1964, where you had Barry Goldwater out of the mainstream candidate for the Republican Party. And in 1992, when you had Ross Perot running as a third-party independent. You could look at the Montana state legislature. It tells a similar story. Since 1995, Republicans have held 18 House or Senate majorities, often by wide margins, while Democrats have only held four majorities, usually by narrow margins. Now, that said, it is true, as you suggest, that Montana has long stood apart from its neighbors, Idaho and Wyoming, in terms of being more hospitable for Democrats. And most notably, you'd look to major figures like Max Baucus and Pat Williams, who were on the scene for decades. But since Pat retired in 1996, the only Democrats to be elected to Congress or as governor have been Baucus, John Tester, Brian Schweitzer, and Steve Bullock. And Tester's two wins were both nail-biters, in which he fell short of 50% of the vote. Similar story with Bullock. Two very close elections. Last time he was under 50%. And this time it looks like he's spot on 50%. So meanwhile, over this same period, Republicans have coasted to easy wins, right? Take our lone House seat back in Congress. Rick Hill and Denny Rehberg never had a close election. And since then, Steve Daines and Ryan Zinke have been crushing their opponents by increasingly larger margins, culminating this week with Zinke's 16-point win. And of course, that came against what would appear to be a credible and accomplished challenger. So all of this is to say that there's been a gradual shift, I think, that you can see over 20 years in which Montana has moved in the direction of its more staunchly Republican neighbors. And while Democrats can clearly still win statewide, it seems to increasingly require things lining up just right. And even then, they often fall short or barely eclipse 50% of the vote. It's just kind of a constant struggle for Democrats. And now, what's potentially a new piece of this story is that after all the down-ballot losses that Chuck mentioned by Democrats this Tuesday, they don't have any obvious people to turn to in their bullpen. You need people in positions like the Attorney General and the Secretary of the State and the others, because those are often where you find good candidates to tap to run for governor or Congress. So as a party, when you're shut out of those lower offices, it makes it tough to move up to the higher ones. You lose your crop of candidates in the waiting. So I think this has to be a big concern for Democrats coming out of this election cycle.
Chuck, Congressman Ryan Zinke has made his ambition to be something more than a congressman known. When he first said he'd like to serve as House Speaker, and then he said he would be happy to be Donald Trump's vice president. And now that Trump is the president-elect, Chuck, do you think it makes sense to wonder if Zinke might have a place in the new administration and that he might take it if offered?
That's a fair question to ask, given how he's put himself forward to be an appointee back when Trump was running in the Montana primary last spring. And I think it's certainly a question worth asking. The other question, though, is does he want to wait and run against John Tester for the U.S. Senate seat in 2 years? That's really the issue to me, is whether he wants to go for that or try to get a federal appointment.
And Rob, there is a speculation about Democratic Senator John Tester's future. 2 years from now, he could face a stiff Republican challenge. Likely will.
Yeah, oh, for sure. We can count on that, Sally. I think if you're looking for silver linings for Montana Democrats coming out of this week, what otherwise was just a very tough week, it's that John Tester's reelection prospects in 2018 all of a sudden look a lot better than they did on Tuesday morning. And that's because midterm elections are notoriously tough for the party that controls the White House. And if Clinton had won on Tuesday, I think this coming midterm would have probably been even tougher than usual for the party controlling the White House, because it would have come in the middle of what would have been the third consecutive Democratic term. And of course, Hillary Clinton had low favorability ratings. It just was shaping up to be an awful environment for Tester. Well, now it looks like a much more favorable environment for him. What history suggests is that whatever party controls the White House, it's the other party that tends to do well in midterm elections. Presumably, this is because there's a perception that the party in control of the White House has overreached, and that there's something of a backlash or reaction against the party in control that tends to favor the party that's out of control. So, you know, Republicans benefited greatly from this when Obama was in the White House in 2010, 2014, as Democrats did in 2006. And there's a long history of this. And if history holds, this would suggest that 2018 is shaping up to be more favorable for Democrats across the country, including here in Montana for Tester.
Overreach may be a term that takes on new meaning in the next few years. Well, finally, Rob and Chuck, I'd like to ask each of you what your biggest takeaway is from the 2016 election. And go to you first, Chuck.
I think my biggest takeaway was just the breadth and depth of the Republican sweep in Montana, winning four of the five land board seats, all but governor, winning all three public service commission seats, three of the five, the other two were Republicans. And then, of course, a very strong showing by Ryan Zinke against what everyone had thought was a strong Democratic candidate for the House seat in Denise Juneau. In the past, Republicans sometimes have had trouble filling the races for Secretary of State, Auditor, Superintendent. A lot of the top Republicans sort of felt that, no, they wanted to run for governor or senator or U.S. House. Well, now we're starting to get some pretty prominent Republicans running for those seats, experienced legislators or former legislators, and they showed up very well. So I think this could be tough for Democrats in 2020 when you've got them really holding every seat but the governor's seat and John Tester's Senate seat.
And Rob?
Well, for me, I think it demonstrates just how divided we are as a country here in Montana. We're somewhat insulated from that, though by no means entirely. And given this division, it does raise real concerns for the health of American democracy and the health of the American political system. You have a situation coming out of Tuesday where a lot of people who've, rightly or wrongly, felt marginalized for some time, they're now celebrating. And there are a lot of people out there right now who I think feel a sense, a real sense of fear. And much of that is for understandable reasons. And another thing that becomes clear is that these two groups are essentially segregated from one another in all sorts of ways, in terms of what neighborhood they live in, whether they've been to college or not, what they see on social media, what kind of beer they drink. You can see it all over the place. It reminds me of the reflections that came from the great French writer and intellectual Alexis de Tocqueville. He emphasized when he visited the United States and wrote his masterpiece, Democracy in America, that it wasn't so much the institutions of American democracy that are critical to maintaining the democratic project. It's more the culture. And what he had in mind when he talked about the democratic culture was the way in which democracy required, depended on people coming together as a community. And tending to the social fabric had to be something that you were constantly engaged in. And he warned of people retreating into closed circles of family and friends who more or less all thought the same as one another and disengaging from the broader community. And I think both at the national level and here in Montana, we've been seeing signs of this for a very long time, but never more starkly than this week.
Well, I think for me, this election, it was the lowest common denominator aspect, both nationally and statewide, and the level of debate seemed especially poor. The ads were ever more insulting, and it just was not uplifting, to say the least, to follow the campaigns on either a state or a national level. That's my takeaway.
Uplifting all around, I guess.
Well, you've been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm your host, Sally Mock, and I've been speaking with University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine and veteran Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson. This is the last Campaign Beat of this election season, but Chuck and Rob and I will be back on air in January with our weekly legislative analysis program, Capitol Talk. And guys, it's been such a pleasure to parse the campaign season with you all fall. Thanks so much, and I hope everybody has a really great holiday season.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Sally. I've enjoyed it.